Okay, the Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for March 25th, 2009 will come to order. Senator Pogermiller, we do have a quorum, so we can go ahead with this, Senator Pogermiller. This is a bill that we heard some precursor to it last year, if I'm not mistaken, so why don't you just go ahead and give us the...
Mr. Chairman, this is about the University Area Alliance to deal with the neighborhoods adjacent to the University of Minnesota. Just a brief history, I won't give you it all, but when we passed the stadium bill for the Gopher Football Stadium, part of that bill was a set-aside to deal with the externalities related to campus football being back on campus, or the stadium being back on campus. The community and the university in Minneapolis have developed a much longer-term thinking here. Rather than just worrying about what happens on game days, they are attempting to develop a long-term strategy for dealing with the environment adjacent to the university so that our land-grant college can stay in a livable area for a long time, so that faculty, staff, and even people not related to the university choose these neighborhoods to live in, so we have vibrant, safe neighborhoods and economically vibrant neighborhoods around our main campus. So a lot of work has been done here. You're going to get a lot of presentation about what has been done in this partnership between the neighborhoods, the university, and Minneapolis. It's really pretty incredible because typically the neighborhoods and the university are fighting, and they still have their battles. They still have their battles. But overall, there's a common understanding here that we do not want to go to the way of many major universities where you end up with neighborhoods around them that are not safe and not people choose not to live in them because they're just dangerous. And we've come a long way here. I'm going to turn over to the president of the university and the mayor of Minneapolis. There is no ask this year. We are not asking financially anything from the legislature this year. We would like to pass some legislation that kind of puts a little more, basically puts in concrete the relationship that has developed, because we cannot be certain that we will have the same type of leaders at the city, the university, and in the neighborhoods who are long-term in their thinking, that we may not have that type of leadership in those areas for the next 5 or 6 years. And so we want to get something institutionalized in the law that allows the group that's currently in power to develop a mechanism. They're not exactly sure how they want to do it. It may become a formal nonprofit. It may become an enhancement of neighborhood organizations. They're working on that. But to basically give some firm basis to this collaboration that it has developed, and the money that was given to the group in the previous years has been used. They're going to describe how it's been used. It's modeled what the intent is in the future. And what we're talking about is, because we have financial challenges at state right now, is kind of getting us in a position where a year or two or three from now, this group will be back asking for financial assistance to partner with Minneapolis and the university financially with serious resources to really build and maintain a community around our campus that everybody sits there and goes, wow, I want to be there. I want to live there. I want to come here to study because it's so fantastic. And let me then just turn it over to the president and the mayor, and then there'll be some detail on exactly what happened with the previous money that the legislature provided.
Senator Pogermiller, which one of you three lives closest to the campus? All right, good job.
I'm pretty close.
Pretty close, okay. President Brudix.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks for giving us this opportunity. I think we actually testified 2 years ago on this bill in this very room. And at the time, it was a vision, I think a dream, that we could really strengthen the relationships involving the university and our broader community partners. And I think we have exceeded every expectation I think we had 2 years ago when we came before this committee. I want to start by just publicly thanking Mayor Rybeck and Senator Pogermiller in particular for for providing the public leadership to get us together. You can't do something of the sort that we're talking about today without having really strong political support and support from the leaders of the city and the legislature and the legislative districts around the University of Minnesota. And so a large part of the reason we're here, I think, has to do with the vision Senator Pogemiller had to put this bill together with the members of our extended community, and also the strong support we've enjoyed and the strong partnerships we've developed with the city of Minneapolis under the leadership of Mayor Rybak. This is all about celebrating what we call the Alliance, the University District Alliance, and I think this is an incredibly good story. I will start with a simple statement that we cannot have a strong University of Minnesota, and the University of Minnesota is your state research and land-grant university, and it not only has standing in the state, but it has considerable standing and capital in the nation and in the world. So we can't be strong academically and represent the best interests of the state of Minnesota without having a strong neighborhood around us, without having a strong community around us to give us strength and to really help create this magnet that draws people to the University of Minnesota and really retains just incredibly capable people in our state and in our university community. Richard Florida, an economist, has talked a lot about these issues, how universities act as this sort of magnet to bring people into states and create the intellectual horsepower, the creativity that drives our economy and quality of life. So this is all about making this area that surrounds the university, including the university itself, a really vibrant place to live and work and enjoy the quality of life that Minnesota is known for. And we think it should be a model for the urban communities of the 21st century. There are some urban universities that I think are exemplars in this area. We have studied them all as a part of our work in the Alliance. The best examples are New Haven, Connecticut, with Yale University, Philadelphia with the University of Pennsylvania, and the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. And they have done, I think, magical things to revitalize the communities around the university and really make the entire area very attractive for visitors as well as residents. When we last met, we asked for a modest amount of money. You provided it. It was about $750,000. Since then, the university has raised through its own internal resources and another $250,000 to help support the work of the Alliance. We've also worked to provide matching support for the Alliance for a very exciting home buyer incentive program that we think has a lot of potential, particularly if we can capitalize on increased private investment and also some of the new legislation coming out of the recent federal stimulus bill. One of the things I'm most proud of, I went before a group of students after we had a little incident in the neighborhood that I think did not reflect very well on our students or the University of Minnesota. It was after a national hockey championship, and I kind of lost my temper, but I went to these students and I said, "You need to be a part of the neighborhood. You're not a pain in the neck to the neighborhood." So I encouraged them to go out and make connections with community organizations and groups, get on boards, volunteer in the parks. When spring arrives, to take some, to give something back to the community, to try to beautify the community at that time of the year. And so we started a student neighborhood liaison program. And the students, it's not only a good thing to do, for our neighborhoods and our community, but it's a fantastic learning opportunity for our students. We also have our Office of Human Resources working on encouraging people to walk to work and do a number of things to help with our urban transportation system. Our Center of Urban and Regional Affairs, the College of Design, is working with the Alliance on design issues that have to do with the long-term future of the neighborhood. University Relations is working on communications, trying to get the word out to the different neighborhoods that surround the university. In short, this has been a very vibrant, very successful a coalition of interests and commitment on the part of all the different parts that surround the University of Minnesota, including the university itself. So what are we trying to accomplish? First of all, we really want to preserve and expand home ownership. We think it's really important to have children and families, students and faculty and staff of the university in our own community. I think when people live in a community, they make a much deeper investment to it. Improving safety and appearance of the business districts and the gateways to the campus area, we think is vitally important. We're trying to build a shared strategic plan, a plan that lays out a long-term vision and the action strategies that we think are necessary to be successful. And we're also really expanding public and private partnerships to carry out the work of the alliance. So I want to strongly urge you to support the suggested language and legislation. I think you'll give us the encouragement to continue the good work that has already started. We clearly are strongly committed to this effort. As I said in my opening remarks, I don't think we can be a strong university without having a strong community, of which we're a vibrant part. And in some ways, I think the economic downturn that we're experiencing right now might give us the opportunity to think more creatively about these issues. And despite the absence of some resources, I would strongly encourage you to support this bill and the legislation that we have proposed to you this afternoon.
Thank you. President Brunick. Mayor Redrick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It's an honor to be with this group here today, and thanks so much for letting us take a couple minutes to talk about this initiative. You know, you can take any
Mayor Redrick, would you say your name for the record, please?
Thank you very much. I forgot that little detail. My name is R.T. Ryback, and I'm the mayor of Minneapolis.
Thank you.
You can take, Mr. Chair, any college or university in the United States of America, and I'll show you some issues that take place at the neighborhood nearby. People love students, but they always don't like to live next to them. Traffic comes in and out of the university. Growth issues almost always are part of something where a neighborhood's grown up around a college or a university, and then as the institution expands, you have deep challenges. This happens all over the place, but there probably isn't a single example, possibly Columbus, Ohio, where such a large institution is in such established neighborhoods. And so Senator Pogemiller was quite visionary, and we deeply appreciate his work when the stadium legislation moved forward and saying this is an issue we should get in front of instead of get hit behind. But the neighborhoods, which have great capacity, and the university, which has had great vision, took that to the next step. This could have been just us coming back here. Are you guys allergic to what we're... Hey, guys?
I think it was his fault.
I don't know what we're doing.
The alliance has cleaned up the air.
Well, there's something wrong.
Well, as I was saying, we could have been here, Mr. Chair, simply talking about a plan we had to take care of traffic on game days. Because of the neighborhood and the university and the city coming together, we've elevated this to much more exciting planning that I think has long-term implications, not just for this area, not just for the city or the university, but for the whole state. We started with the basic issues of public safety. The president referenced an incident we had a few years back when the university won a championship and we had some issues breaking out. I have to admit there was a time when even I, as big a Gopher fan as I am, kind of cheered for them not winning a national championship again because of some of the issues we had. That's not the case anymore. Because the university and student leaders and the neighborhoods work together, we now have much deeper partnerships on public safety. A good example, but really only a starting point. The president talked about housing. Housing has been something in great transition on the university. As the university locates more housing on campus, a very good thing to create more of a residential campus, it has had some impact on the neighborhoods that are now having students moving out of them. And so we've had transitional issues there. The solution is obviously to increase home ownership, long-term residents in those neighborhoods. The president referenced the home ownership incentive that's grown out of this work. It's modeled on some of the work we've done in North Minneapolis called the Minneapolis Advantage, where we do housing incentives for people to move into the neighborhood. We eventually want to be creating incentives for university employees to be moving directly into those areas so that they can walk to work but be long-term people in the neighborhoods as well. It's included transportation. Having this work on the ground has helped us navigate through the question of what happens with light rail as it moves through this area. How do we reroute roads as that happens? How do we even look at issues of bike commuting? We just announced a very large grant for a university bike bike station that will be also integrated into the city's bike share program. All of these together are some of the issues that are taking place right now that we were able to navigate through much better because this committee, thankfully, stepped up and helped us build this partnership that's about those issues that's really about more long-term. I want to finish by saying it's really important to remember that this can also have broader implications. About an hour ago, I gave my State of the City address, and it was all about creating opportunity and jobs. And I want you to think about that for a little bit because I talked a lot about the issue of incubators of innovation. How do you really create new jobs and put people who have great talents together? Well, there's really no other better incubator of innovation than the University of Minnesota and the neighborhoods that surround it. And I'm not a physicist, but I do know enough to say that when people and ions are put together, they create energy. Okay, that's what you need to do. Think about University Research Park, the area all around the football stadium, and think about the neighborhoods that surround it. And now compare that to what happens around, say, Stanford University, where some of the great new ventures are being hatched every day because of the unity between smart people and smart institutions. We don't do that well enough here, but we will. What we hopefully will be able to do as we get on the ground with this work is to build that into not just a neighborhood with a football stadium and a university, but instead an incubator of innovation that's creating more jobs for this state. More than anything else, we want it to be a place that's a good place to be. We want a student who goes to university to say, I want to stay here because I want to build my family here in the neighborhoods that surround this area. And those people become part of keeping talent and growing talent in this community. So this is a good, and I would say a great first step. We have some phenomenal neighbors in the room who've been part of this work, and I want to thank all of you for doing just some outstanding work, and we're extremely excited about continuing it as we go forward.
Thank you, Mayor. Are there any questions? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Pogemiller, if you can answer. I guess I'm wondering that some of the language on page 1, line 10, it says are requested. So there's no requirement that they create anything, the appropriate organization, because our requested is pretty loose.
With the current leadership of the community organizations and the university and the city, this is enough. This is what they've asked for, and it creates a where they can go back to their peer, to their groups, to his board of regents, to the rest of the city, to say, no, the legislature wanted us to do this. So I think this language is going to be real. This is the language they've requested.
Well,
but the key, Senator Fischbach, why do it at all if that's all it says?
And that was my next question.
Because we may not have the same type of leadership a couple years from now that we do, and this kind of the synchronization of talent, of neighborhood leaders, and presidents and mayors that and city council people that we have now. And this is the moment to strike. And they will. What will happen is they are going to create some lasting structure that the next time I come before this group asking for money, which could be a year, 2 years, depending on what happens with the economy, there's going to be kind of a structure there where you go, okay, here's what we're investing in, and here's what's going to happen. And the university is going to commit serious resources to this, the city, and hopefully the legislature. And that's what's going to make this potentially work. Because you need pretty serious resources to pull off both quality neighborhoods and incubation, as the mayor just described. Because you want your best and brightest people from around the world to want to be part of this community.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Pogemiller, all that said, then they could do this. Without any legislation, they could do this right now and be done with it and have a wonderful organization without us putting this kind of fluff, and it's a little fluffy, you have to admit, into state statute.
Let the mayor talk about the real politic of this.
Mr. Chair and Senator, we want the legislature to push all the partners here to say, get your act together and put something on the ground that makes this permanent. So it's not just what are we doing during the construction of the stadium, but it's ongoing. we understand enough about when you put all different sorts of partners together, let them put the arms around specifically what that is. But I like the idea that there's something in here that says that there needs to be something permanent ongoing.
Senator Fischbach?
Uh-huh. Senator Pogba.
Why don't we strike our requested and say shall?
I'll move that.
Senator Fischbach moves on line 1.10 to strike our requested and insert.
Requested two,
and insert shall. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion is adopted.
And then,
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogamiller, another one that maybe you could explain a little better to me. On line 113, without limitation, it says universities, Minneapolis, campus area, neighborhoods, including without limitation, the following. So I guess I read that because it's the purpose of the organization and then the language of without limitation. What are you trying to get at there? Or is there a, I guess that kind of opens it wide up in my mind.
I think that was the intent. I don't know that that language is necessary, but I think the intent was to basically say, here's the things we are talking about, but there may be some things we hadn't thought about yet.
But Mr. Chair, Senator Pogamiller, maybe not limited to, but without limitation sounds pretty good.
Not limited to would be fine. I didn't realize Senator Fischbach
Senator
was such
Fischbach.
A wordsmith. I'm impressed. She's been hanging around Senator Miriam.
And Mr. Much. Chair, Senator Pogamiller, you're lucky you didn't name something because I would have cut that out too.
So that would be a good, I think that actually makes it better.
So on lines 1.13, Senator Fischbach, what is it? Without limitation, you
remove,
want that deleted? And
oh, but not limited to, I'm sorry. It would be remove without limitation, but not limited to.
Including but not limited to. All right. So Senator Fischbach moves that on line 1.13. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion to adopt. Any further wordsmithing?
No, Mr. Chair, I guess just in general, Mr. Chair, I still do, even though I appreciate the amendments, I really just think that we are moving into stuff that this, if this can be done, if this is something that everybody really is, it really wants to do, and given the current people that are there could do this, I don't understand why we have to get involved in forcing someone to do create this organization, which we don't even know the details of yet. And I would think it would make more sense for them to come up with the organization, the suggestions, how they wanted it set up. I think Senator Pogamiller mentioned a 501c3 at one point, but they haven't decided those things. So maybe it would make more sense to come up with that and then make the report instead of, I mean, the way I read that, the organization will be created when we get the report. So I would think it would make more sense if we're going to put something in statute and say you have to create an organization. Understand what that organization is going to be.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, what we are doing today, we're about to do is report on what has happened to date. So this is one of the reports now. They're going to explain what they have actually done with the previous appropriation from the legislature. There is a current organization.
Is he going to ask about the R request?
To a large extent, it's being driven by the volunteerism of neighborhood community activists. All who have other jobs, they are now in a position where they need to bring this up to scale. There needs to be a more formal creation of a more serious, long-term organization. And I'm only mentioning a 501c3 because to give you the scope of what it may or may not be that, but it may or may not have staff, but it has to be something that can sustain the energy that's going to be necessary to create the kind of things the president and the mayor were talking about. And since it's a collaboration, not everybody agrees, and not no one person, because you're talking about major institutions, a city, a university, and neighbors who all don't have the same interests, really, to kind of keep that moving needs kind of an imprimatur and a nudge from the state legislature. And so that's why this, trust me, well, the whole purpose here is if this passes, there's going to be a lot of people running around saying, where are we on this? And Pogemiller expects this. The legislature expects this. You've been tasked to do something. What's going on? So that as people get tired and aren't able to work through some of their disagreements, someone can walk in the room and say, come on, come on. You have to do this. Because we're talking about people who basically, this is not their job number one. It's not the president of the university's job number one to make sure that there are livable communities around his institution. He sees that it's really important. Matter of fact, he's the one who initially brought this to my attention. And the mayor of Minneapolis has a lot of other neighborhoods. And the neighbors are simply volunteers. And so you need some kind of force or incentive for people to kind of stick in there, keep plugging away. We've burned through a lot of volunteers already because this is hard. It's hard to... It's hard to get people to do things that they think somebody else should do. And so for a modest investment so far, we have, the legislature has incented major institutions in our state who are against change because they're big to fundamentally now come forward and say, no, we get it. We want to do this. Just kind of keep kicking us in the rear a little bit. That's what the bill does. That's what's intended. If we were not in the economic straits we're in right now, there'd be an ask right here. They're ready to do some things. But that's not realistic. We're cutting budgets. And so we need to do something now that says, hey, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And they're going to describe what was done with some of this money, and I think you'll get a better picture of why this is vital to keep it going.
Senator Fishbach.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, I just want to—I understand that you're just using some of those as examples, but that's part of my concern, is that we're saying, go form this organization and then come and tell us what you did. And what I think maybe would make more sense is go get a report together, show us what you're thinking would make sense— and then we'll tell you to put the organization together because we're telling them to put something together that we really don't know what is going to look like. It may or may not be this. It may or may not be that. And so that's where I wonder if we're putting the cart before the horse by saying you have to do this now, but we don't know what it looks like.
Well, Senator Fishbach, I think Senator Pogemiller has got a couple of witnesses that might address your question.
And Mr. Chair, I understand that. I understand the witnesses saying in the bill, that's what we're doing. No matter what the report is, I understand that they're probably doing wonderful things.
There is a report.
Okay.
Yeah,
Senator Fishbach, what you're asking for is here, and we're talking about taking this to a different level.
But see, that's my point.
No, but the only thing that's not certain is what's going to be the structure when we come back here. What's going to be the structure we're going to ask you to invest $20 or $30 million in?
Ooh. Better be a good report.
And Mr. Chair, there better be a lot of alcohol served over there, huh?
Senator Kielash, did you have?
Well, I used a big number to show you how serious this is. The university is going to willing, if we keep this going, the university is willing to put serious resources into this, as is Minneapolis. And I don't know if it'll be $30 million, but we potentially are talking about that scale of activity. You have about 50 to 70,000 people that gather in this small area every single day. And this is really an important area to the future economic vitality of our state. And what the president has described is we cannot afford to have a university with an island of deterioration around it, because that will hurt our ability to draw top talent and keep them here to create jobs, because lifestyle matters to people. And to the extent that we have a really vibrant community, the mayor calls that a potential for a really economic incubator, both ideas, creativity, and jobs, economics. So that's the concept here. It's not unreasonable to me that we won't be talking about a $30 million thing 2 years from now. Maybe not all 30 from the state, but 10 from the U, 10 from us.
Senator Pogemiller, in a in a real practical way, you sort of have to have this in statute in order to be able to get an appropriation also.
No one's going to give you an appropriation of that significance unless you've got people in charge who can actually tell you what how they're going to spend it and be...
So the report is going to be an important part of it. But Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogemiller, I notice that the definition of the neighborhoods is not the established neighborhoods that are currently there. I would like to put an amendment in that the neighborhood associations that are currently there are the neighborhoods that you're going to work with, that the U of is going to work with, rather than surrounding neighborhoods and appropriate organizations. Because if a neighborhood objects, they can change the organization to something else on some of this funding. I'm very aware that the university and the neighborhoods in that area have butted heads on several occasions about development and the fact that the U did not take the neighborhood associations as seriously as maybe they are currently doing under the alliance. But I'd like to name those neighborhoods. Mr. Chair, I'd like to delete with surrounding neighborhoods and appropriate organization on line 1.10. And insert the names of Marcy Homes, Southeast Como, Prospect Park, and Cedar Riverside. And I do believe there's a neighborhood organization now established at the U of M, formal.
Not really.
Okay, then that will
be
their
to
own
name the neighborhoods.
Well, they have the neighborhood
are,
there as well.
Trust me, they know who they are.
Yeah.
Senator Pogemiller, do you want to put that amendment on?
That'd be fine.
Does the staff have the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. On line 1.10, delete surrounding neighborhoods and appropriate organization and insert Marcy Holmes, Southeast Como, Prospect Park, and Cedar Riverside neighborhoods.
And does anybody else?
Excuse me, neighborhood associations.
Neighborhood associations.
Thank you.
And is there
anybody? You could put business organizations also, or associations, mm-hmm. business associations.
Do you want to add that in there?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, we can add neighborhood and business associations.
Okay. And did we miss any neighborhoods?
We've got them.
Okay.
Councilmember Hofstad tells me that's the correct ones.
That's them. Okay. On Senator Kielash's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted. Before we hear the report, Senator Pogemiller, do we want to say how many people should be on the membership of the? No. Okay. All right. Who do we have here?
If they're going to be doing this.
Go ahead. My
name is Arvon Fraser. I'm president of the Marcy Homes Neighborhood Association and a senior fellow emerita of the university at the Humphrey Institute and a member of the Alliance Steering Committee. I'm a 50-plus year resident of Marcy Homes, Southeast Minneapolis, and have seen the neighborhood go from a mix of faculty and university employees and many owner-occupant homes to heavily student and absentee landlord area. Now the owner-occupants, the homeowners, are only 12% of the population. The Alliance, as the report shows, is working to sort of improve that statistic, have a more balanced and better neighborhood, shall we say, that will be an asset to the university. We agree with President Brunix, who said that we are aiming to make it a model of a 21st century neighborhood. And my colleague to my right is the head of both the Alliance and the Prospect Park neighborhood, Dick Popoli.
Well, my name is Dick Popoli, and I'm been a long-term resident of Prospect Park neighborhood, just on the east bank of the university. And I'm also somewhat recently retired as a faculty member from the university, having spent 40 years of my career at doing that work. Currently, I'm the co-chair of the Alliance Steering Committee, along with Vice President Himmel. And while I'm at it, I'd like to also introduce, we have a number of people here from the Alliance Steering Committee, and just introduce you briefly to them. Dick Gilliard, standing here, a member of the Steering Committee. Katie Fournier, Ted Tucker, Arvon Fraser, and sitting back here, Council Member Diane Hofstede is on the Steering Committee. Also with us is Wookie Freeman and Jen Morlock, sitting behind me, who have provided substantial staff support and assistance to the Alliance. They both work for the University Department of University Relations. I'd like to comment on the report, as Senator Pogemiller outlined, and I think you all have a copy of it. You should also have a copy of a summary stapled together rather than ring-bound, and I'd like to kind of spend a little time walking you through that summary. If we turn to page 3 of the summary, I'm just going to go through these page by page and comment on them. Why does the university district matter? Human capital, this is a major activity center, as we pointed out, 70,000 to 80,000 people a day converge on the university campus, and including students, workers, and a number of people who are residents and go to the university for events, sport events, cultural events, et cetera. Next page, why does the university matter? Again, it's a center for research, discovery, learning, and culture. Next page also carries on that theme, pointing out that the university is an economic engine. It's an important driver of economic development and success for the state of Minnesota. Next page points out that it's also a major medical and health learning centers. And so that it contributes to many aspects of our well-being and culture in Minnesota. What makes the University District Alliance work? Well, in the past year, I believe that we've demonstrated that we can bring together vice presidents of the university, elected officials from the city of Minneapolis at a table with neighborhood, business, and student leaders in an effective partnership to address mutual interests. What has the Alliance accomplished? Next page. It has accomplished a number of demonstration projects which were aimed at rebalancing home ownership and attracting long-term residents. And these are detailed in the report itself. We've launched a campaign to urge people to live near your work, particularly people at the university and surrounding areas. This has resulted in a website which also lists properties that are available in the university district. It has worked with the city and neighborhoods on issues of property and regulatory issues, I would say in an effective way that we haven't really seen happen in quite a long time. And we've begun a bottom-up planning process for defining a shared vision for the district, for the university district. And you heard a little, both the mayor and the president of the university comment on that. The next page, the leadership and participation has been broad and deep. The members of the steering committee right now include, as I said, vice presidents from the university, elected officials, and also the head of planning of the city of Minneapolis, the presidents of each of the four neighborhood associations that were mentioned just recently, the presidents of the four business associations that are in the university district, as well as representatives of the student body and the leadership of the student body. The participation generally has been excellent and broad and deep, I would say, at the university. There's a list here of all of the offices and centers and so on at the university that have been very much involved in the work of the Alliance. And I'd like the center single out the Center for Urban and Regional Affairs, the Office of Human Resources, and the Office of University Relations for sort of special notice. It goes on to the City of Minneapolis. We've had enormous cooperation collaboration, I should say, with the City of Minneapolis. Two of the members of the City Council sit on the steering committee and also help with the working groups of the Alliance. One is actually chaired by Councilman Gordon. We've had very productive relationships with several of the city departments offices within that are part of the city. Recently, we've also reached out to potential partners like Augsburg College, which are basically a next-door neighbor within the university district, Southeast Minneapolis Council on Learning, which has been a long-term group that has looked at the whole issue of education in the community, and the Southeast Seniors Organization, which is a living at home block nurse program, which tries to keep people in their homes instead of going on to nursing homes. The next steps for the Alliance were outlined somewhat briefly before. I'll just mention a couple of things here. We want to expand the demonstration projects that we've already begun, sharpen zoning and regulation in the district, further engage students, complete the development of a master plan and vision, attract and work with private developers and new partners, and as was just discussed recently, pointed out to formalize the Alliance governance to build a strong and sustainable organizational base. On the next page, the legislative funding and the leverage of that was mentioned by President Brunix. In short, the $750,000 that was appropriated by the legislature for the work of this Alliance has been leveraged to the tune of over $550,000 additional dollars from the university and from the City of Minneapolis, and also in terms of in-kind consultants, donated consultant time to the Alliance. Finally, the resources that would be required to take the Alliance to the next level are listed here. They expanded operations in terms of setting up an organization and staffing it appropriately to project and increase the impact and reach of the demonstration projects that we've already begun. And finally, and importantly, investment to catalyze a transformative private investment in the university district. Personally, I want to say that I'm enthusiastic that we will be able to continue working together and to achieve the goals that have been laid out in this language of the proposed legislation, and I think we'll even go beyond that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I just point to page 15. Mr. Popley mentioned some of these things, but it puts some numbers on actual homes that have been affected, and they've done real things with this modest amount of money.
You know, Senator Pogemiller, Senator Torres Ray had a bill in front of Senator Metzen's committee the other day and was concerned about construction and the effect it had on small businesses. Is that part of the focus that this group will have, too, to make sure that the small businesses that are in the area who are negatively affected by either the train or the construction of the stadium or whatever it might be are being, I mean, is that one of the things you might be considering in this overall plan?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this has been a concern of all of the participants in the Alliance. As you pointed out, there's a lot of change going on in the university district. You know, that goes beyond just the issues that have been mentioned with regard to the student housing. The light rail is one of those. The development of a major, we hope, research park adjacent to the university are all big factors here, and that's one of the reasons why the representatives and the presidents, in fact, of the local business associations are also part of the alliance.
Not to put that issue in here, Mr. Chairman, but the work of this group and just the discussions going on in the neighborhood has led to thinking regarding the light rail line through the campus. And there's, at another time, you're going to hear some comments about why that route is the wrong route. But that's for another time.
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogumiller, I think you have a wonderful idea here, and I know that 2 years ago that we helped get this partnership started. I just hope that you'll share this report with us, because I know both in your testimony and the mayor's testimony, you talked about jobs and the potential for economic development in these neighborhoods. So I know that when the report comes back, hopefully that this committee will get a chance to see the report as well, or if there's more appropriations that need to take place at that time.
This would be the spot, Mr. Chairman. Senator Pappas is interested in what's going on here, but once she realized what the activity was, she understood that it more closely fit into the university is simply a partner. This is not about higher ed.
Okay,
they're a significant partner.
So, Senator Pogman, on line 2.6 where it says higher education policy and finance, is that the higher education policy committee and Senator Cohen's finance committee, or is that the higher education policy and finance committee?
I think it's the Pappas committee, aren't they? Isn't it both?
Yeah, well, I think what Senator Sparks is asking, should the report be given to this committee also?
I absolutely should. That should be fixed.
Okay.
Yes.
And then, so after the word finance, insert and economic development and housing budget division.
Just say finance.
Council, help me on this.
Mr. Chair, we just call it finance committee. So after finance, insert and economic development, finance. We don't say budget division.
Do we want to put economic development and housing, since that's the name of the committee?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So Senator Sparks moves that after finance, insert and economic development and housing. It's on line 2.6.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
You remembered my name?
Yes, I did.
Mr. Chair, the way I read it is it says to the chairs of the legislative committees, so it would be higher education policy and finance, which would be Senator Cohen's, because they refer to two chairs. So is that the way we're – because then it would be higher education policy, comma, finance, and – economic and proper name of this committee.
Well,
does that make sense?
With the word chairs, does that change things?
Because that it is here to the chairs.
Do we have any English instructors out here?
Mr. Chair, I would just suggest then after finance on line 2.6, insert and the chair of the economic development and housing finance. Is that better?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I was just trying to get to the point that I think that they were referring to two committees when they cited higher education policy and finance, because they recognized
right.
Two chairs, plural.
Right, because it says chairs of legislative committees.
So that's why I'm suggesting it would say higher education policy, comma, finance, and economic whatever. Whatever the proper name of this committee is, I guess I'm not.
Mr. Chair, so just inserting a comma after finance, then is that
and removing the word and?
Let's just put after and economic development, finance committee. Okay, how does that sound?
Okay.
All right. That way, we got two committees for sure.
Mr. Chair, that works. I guess I was just if Senator Cohen wanted.
I understand
that's
your.
All.
I understand your point. Okay, so Senator Sparks will move that amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, adopted. So you've been reading all the bills today, Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair.
That's good.
I generally read as much as I can. But I also, Mr. Chair, caught a little thing that we may want to correct in that. On line 2.4, it says are requested. And so they are only requested to send us this report. And maybe we should change that one to shall so that we guarantee that you have some reading material.
That's your intention.
Excellent.
That's your intention anyway, right?
It was kind of against mandates, but I'm willing to mandate.
All right, on line 2.4 and continuing on line 2.5, Senator Fischbach moves to delete our requested to and insert shall. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the motion is adopted. Any further discussion, comments? Anybody else want to say anything about this bill? Okay, seeing none, then Senator Sparks will move that Senate File 1541 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Economic Development Omnibus Bill as amended. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the motion is adopted. Thank you very much. Very nice presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate it.
President, thank you, Ms. Committee members, for approving the bill. Appreciate it.
Senator Pogemiller? Senator Pogemiller? Those are the most amendments we've had on any bill yet this year.
Is that the shortest bill you've had?
Yes, and it was the shortest, too.
That's the motion to adjourn. That's the
shortest. Oh, that's good. I think Cora's raised here. Cora's here.
It's disgusting.
Wasn't that good?
What did you do with this bill? Send it off?
We know we left it here. It's going to be a vehicle.
Development and housing finance. Isn't that
work? Vehicle, yeah.
And finance,
yeah.
Grouping the two together.
Yeah, that's what you usually say, like, to the environment, natural resources, and resources, policy, and finance. And, you know, cap, education, policy.
Senator Torres Ray, welcome to the committee.
They are two separate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members. I don't have a mayor or university president or city council members with me, but I have a lot of kids. So I hope that, and some of them had to leave. But I thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this bill before you. And I hope that you are able to support me on my effort to create jobs for youth. We have a, sorry.
Where's this yelling coming from?
Stays here.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Senate File 1608 is, again, an intent to really bring your attention.
Senator Torres, before we go forward, there's a couple of blank appropriations on line 2.22. Do you have an idea what numbers you want to put in there?
Mr. Chairman, I was going to rely on your advice. I know that this is, as you hear the presentation, what my intent here is that if you, when the conversations about program job creation come to this committee and you're looking at the stimulus money and other money that may be available at the state, you may be able to make an appropriation for this. So I would rely entirely on this committee's support to define that number because I am not clear as to how much money the state of Minnesota may receive for job creation for youth.
Okay, go ahead. You go ahead and do your presentation, and we'll talk about the money afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. this particular bill will make changes to the Youth Build Program that is currently administered by the Department of Economic Development. And as you know, Youth Build is a pre-apprenticeship program that serves at-risk youth through education and training programs that include work experience through grants to public nonprofit organizations. Again, Mr. Chairman and members, I would like to get your support to get funding for these programs that greatly benefit the state economy and Minnesota taxpayers. Thank you. Thanks to the hard work of these young people, 44 units of affordable housing were constructed and renovated, benefiting over 100 low-income individuals over the past year. And it is estimated that the program has already returned nearly $4.4 million to the state economy, and that taxpayer money is returned at the rate of $7 to $1. And, Mr. Chairman and members, I have some people who wish to testify and perhaps respond to some of your questions. I know that through the stimulus package, we in Minnesota may receive some money for housing, and this program is really prepared to train youth. They have what it takes in terms of facilities and trainers. And one problem that we're seeing and that you probably have heard about is that youth are going to be really impacted by these tough economic times because, as you know, they are really not prepared to take on a job right away. They don't have the training or really the job history that is required in tough economic times to be hired right away.
And in the audience, I hope they are still with us. Okay, thank you. I have Samantha Kerman, if you could please come, and Alice Ribard, if you could please come and provide your testimony.
Welcome to the committee. Can you say your name for the record, please?
My name is Alice Ribard, and I'm a teacher at City Academy.
Okay, hey, 1 second. Pull that microphone a little bit closer to you and then say that again.
Okay. My name is Alice Ribard, and I'm a teacher at City Academy High School, and we have been a youth-built organization since 1993. Since that time, we have numerous houses for low-income families. Lately, our current emphasis right now is on renewable energy. We just created a renewable energy certificate within our school, trying to prepare the students to go into the new job market that exists. We're trying to work out agreements with the local colleges so that we can prepare our colleges for the programs that they are now developing. We also have been working with the local watershed district and other organizations to build water gardens. We built two at the Wilder Rec Center. Our intention is to build two more. We did a sustainable landscape. In the summertime, we have a youth conservation corps that beautifies the neighborhood. And basically, that's the goal of youth building, basically to provide housing for low income, to provide jobs for the students, to prepare them for the post-secondary options.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Samantha Kumar. I'm a junior attending City Academy High School. The youth build program, they pay us by stipends, and right now, the stipends are really helping me with job right now because I can't find a job, and it's hard to find a job right now because I just turned 16 not too long ago, and having a temporary job really helps me, having some kind of income come in, and it really... Yeah. I gained skills doing the construction, and it encouraged me to apply to Dunwoody College. So I want to go into engineering technology. So that's one of my goals right now, and the youth bill really helped me do that, gain the skills to go towards that.
What's your favorite tool?
Hammer.
All right. Either building or knocking things down, one or the other, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any questions? Senator Kielash.
Ms. Rivard, is part of your funding through the Minneapolis Summer Youth Program as well, or are some of these projects?
Nancy, you know more about the funding than I do. Could you answer that question? Do you?
If you could please come to the table, Nancy, and introduce yourself.
Hello, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash. My name is Nancy Wasinen, and I work for the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Where are you from?
In the Office of Youth Development.
No. I mean, where are you from?
St. Paul.
Oh, okay. Are you related to the Wasinens on the Iron Range?
Yeah, we had... Actually, my grandmother came from the Duluth Superior area. And
that's not the Iron Range, but okay.
Well, my dad was working up there as an iron worker, and he actually took some classes in Finnish at Mesabi Community College. So, does that count?
Yeah, does that count?
Ixikaksi kolmi neljävisi. That's all I know in Finnish. But anyway, Rukavina speaks it fluently. But go ahead.
The Youth Build Program receives a little over $1 million. A year in state funding, and some of our youth build sites do collaborate with the WIA program and the Minnesota Youth Program, but our funding we basically rely on just state youth build funding. So WIA is counted as a separate. The kids are separate WIA or MYP students.
Senator Torres-Ray, counsel points out to me that in the stimulus package, there is no maintenance of effort requirement in the youth build money, but he also points out we don't know how much there's going to be. So the last line of the bill, on line 2.32 and 2.33, federal appropriations under this paragraph must supplement not supplant state funding under this section. It doesn't appear to be necessary, and it might be tying the hands. So I don't know if you want to take that out or not. But maybe your witness knows something about this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been told that you are correct. So if a member would like to move to delete that language,
all right,
I'm okay.
Then Senator Sparks will delete on line 2.32 after the period, everything after the period, and line 2.33. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. I would suggest a number, except since we don't know a number, I'm going to suggest we leave it blank until we find out a number. How's that sound? And unless, does anybody have any more questions on this? Senator Saxhog?
Yeah, I'd move Senate File 1446 as amended.
1608?
1608. Oh, I already put that one right now.
Okay. All right.
Before we vote, Mr. Chairman, would it be, could we fill in the fund, that there's a blank for the fund by the name? It must be a name.
Where are you looking?
Well, I'm trying to find it again. Now that I looked away, I can't find it when I come back. But there are dollar figures here on line 222.
Well,
no, I'm sorry, 223. Which fund? I mean, is it a fund with a name that we can fill in there?
Do we know that?
Mr. Chairman, members.
Doesn't give a dollar. I mean, it's not a dollar amount, it's just the fund name.
As you said, what information we have so far, it says unknown. So it would be better for us to put it in
the
a
unknown
bill
fund.
And
okay.
Fill it in later when we know for sure.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, before you move, I have been told that we have two kids here who really wanted to speak to
Where
you.
Are they?
And so if it is okay with your time,
absolutely.
I would really appreciate an opportunity to bring them to the table because they've been patiently waiting.
We
address
love having,
this committee.
We love having kids.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Where are they?
I have Mr. Will Jones and Ms. Brittany daughter. They work with the, they are with the Guadalupe Alternative Programs.
Welcome to the committee. Go ahead. Say your name for the record and then tell us your experience. Pull the microphone close to you and articulate and yell, okay? It's like you're on the playground, so we can hear you good.
She might be too old for a playground.
I'm Brittany Dunn. I go to Guadalupe Alternative Program. I work in Youthville. Excuse me, I'm a little bit nervous.
Deep breaths, that's all. They always help.
Don't be nervous.
Hi, you guys. My name is Willie Jones. I'm a Youth Bill graduate. I graduated in 2006. Youth Bill was a good program for me because doing Youth Bill kept me out of the streets, running around with my friends and stuff like that, and it gave me a good opportunity to learn a career, a trade, to do a certain lot of things like plumbing, you know, building houses and stuff like that. So Youth Bill was a good program, opportunity for me to learn that stuff and put me in a position where I am now. I work for the school that I graduated from doing janitorial work and still got side jobs doing construction and stuff like that. So Youth Bill was a good program.
Can you say your name again, please?
Willie Jones.
Willie Jones. You feel better now? Take a deep breath. We're not scary.
It also gave us job experience to let us know what it's going to be like after high school. And it gained us leadership skills, opportunity to learn more about construction.
And also teamwork and working with other people.
Yeah. And what's your favorite tools?
My favorite tools is a sawzall.
Power tools. All right. Okay.
The director of this program is here as well. If you have any questions for him with respect to the work that they do and how they teach children, this is, we have a lot of, they are serving right now, I believe it's 375 kids. So we have significant effort going into that.
My name is James Grasso. I am the head instructor at the Guadalupe Alternative Program.
youth build program. Our program, we do one remodel, more or less, every year. This year, we were hoping to do a very quick remodel on the house, but the kids got to learn how to do what's called green demolition. And so the house has been demolished about 50%, and we've been able to save about 50% of the material that we've taken down, and we've been using it to build compost boxes, and we're going to be building sheds. We built a new garage on the project. We put a steel roof on the garage, so the kids got a chance to learn. One of the new products that's coming into the area is a steel roof. Have you ever been in northern Michigan? They're all over the place up there. Residential steel roofing is a new idea here because it's green because it uses recycled material and it's able to be recycled again. So you don't have asphalt shingles going into the landfills. So the students actually got a chance to learn how to do a new product that most roofers don't know how to use. We're going to be putting that on the house also once we start onto the rebuilding part of the house that we're on now. We also, all our kids do, every quarter they do community service with Westside Farms. We help everything from shoveling manure to, once again, building compost boxes out of old material. This year we're hoping to build a large deck system for them to use where they're able to get from their upper gardens down to their lower gardens. And it's a good opportunity for our kids to work with another organization also.
So, Mr. Grasso, is Mr. Jones good with the Sawzall?
Mr. Jones is very good with the Sawzall. And all our kids, this year, unfortunately, we were hoping to do more construction. And because of this house we are working on, it was built in 1883, everything had been eaten through by rats and squirrels. And so we ended up taking it down a lot farther than it needed to be. But all of our students got very good with sledgehammers and Sawzalls. And we're pouring new concrete next week, and now they're going to get good at using nail guns and chop saws.
Nail guns are really a lot of fun, you guys. Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, how's the academics do at the program?
Well, the academic, we do everything that we do, we teach in the classroom first, and then we get out onto the site. But the students are half time with me on the site, and half the time they're in class doing English, math, history. It's a high school that mm-hmm. we are a part of. And so the students, the main thing we do is training them how to be ready to have a job when they get done with our program. And so one of the main things we work on is making sure that they show up every day. For a lot of these kids, that's a big deal, and they've never had to do that before. And that once they start learning that they have to show up every day to work steady and to... I treat it like a regular job site, like I did when I was a contractor. And so when these students learn those skills, all of a sudden they can start learning how to do some carpentry things. But even if they don't want to be carpenters, I had one young girl. She was in my program, worked hard, everything. She was there for the first 4 weeks for this training portion. And she was pounding away at this nail. And I asked her, I said, Liddy, do you like this? No. And but she didn't like the construction part. She figured that out, but she stuck with it, and she learned all the things that it takes to become a good employee wherever you are, whether it's construction or something else. So that's what we try to teach them. We don't build these houses quickly because the kids do all the work. And so when we talk about green building, we teach these kids green building like we're going to be putting on sprayed-on foam. The kids do all of that, and so it takes three times as long. So it's not even always the most efficacious way to get these houses built. That's not our main thing. They're building these houses, they're remodeling these houses in the inner city, they're changing that. But what they're doing is they're learning it hands-on. I already know how to do this. I don't need to learn any of this stuff anymore. But the kids are learning it. And sometimes we do it twice, sometimes we do it three times, but they learn. And then their academics they get from the school. If they don't do that part, they stop coming to me. They have to do both.
I'm sorry, I missed your name, sir. James Grasso, that's right. I wrote it down and then I didn't look at the paper again to remember it. I recall that when the schools come to us, many times they come and they say, we want you to stop trying, you know, we don't want the kids to have jobs because they're falling asleep in class. And I said, those are the ones that are roaming around the streets at nighttime. You know, if a kid wants to have a job, when is he going to learn to, if he wants one and his folks are happy that he's doing fine in school, what do you care? And so I commend you for doing that, because I said, when will a kid, well, any kid, whether girl or boy, learn how to work if they aren't allowed to when they want to?
Right.
When you say, no, you can't because you got to be in school, adding science, you know, whatever the thing is. I commend you for that, because I think it's a, you know, you've got to learn to work in life.
Thank you very much.
Ain't going to get it free forever, all the time.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray. So Senator Saxog moves that Senate file 1608 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
As amended?
As amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the motion is adopted. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Who's here? Senator Saltzman, are you here? Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is the first time I've been in your committee, even though I tend to see a lot of bills before they come to you in business, industry, and jobs. And this is Senate File 1446, and it refunds the Office of Science and Technology, which is an office that was included in your bill last year, or in the Senate Finance bill, a $400,000 appropriation. And this office is very important. I believe you have a handout that is an article that was in one of the local, the business newspapers on the state tech office. It is not in the governor's proposal, and we think it's something that is very important. And I have today some folks with us to talk about that, including Dr. Tim Mulcahy from the U of M. You've got the president and the vice president before you today from the U of M. I also have Ms. Betsy Luffs, who is with the Office of Science and Technology, and she's not here to speak in favor of the bill, but to speak about, and also Steve Ernst, who is with Lockheed Martin, to really talk about what this bill does on the front line. But to sort of give you some background about what this office does and why it's so important is that we're doing, or that we've done, some really important things in this state in terms of investing in the U of M with our bonding projects to really build the facilities needed to do the research. And so we're doing a lot in Minnesota in terms of innovation and ideas, but people say, well, aren't we doing enough? Well, the problem is that after we have these great ideas, we have to get them from the lab bench over to the workplace. And the technology transfer, there's different phases that it goes to, and it's referred to sometimes the Valley of Death, because you've got to have the different pots of money to keep the project moving forward. And Dr. Mulcahy is here, and you've got a handout from him in the in that gold and the gold, and then the, excuse me, maroon colors. To sort of give you Economic Development 101. So, Dr. Mulcahy.
Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record, Doctor.
Chair Tomasoni, Senators, Senator Saltzman. My name is Tim Mulcahy. I'm the Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota, and I've been asked to very briefly try to contextualize the importance of the funds and the function of the office and of the bill that's before you. And I would just very quickly walk through this presentation. It's actually much more exciting when you actually see the animation, but you're going to have to trust me on that one. The point I'm trying to make here very quickly is that there's a very long continuum between discovery, which is typically what happens at great research universities like University of Minnesota, and its ultimate transformation to a product that improves the quality of life of the citizens of the state of Minnesota and in the nation and the world. I've just tried to show that continuum as a single line from discovery to the consumer on the first slide, and try to emphasize that it's a long process, in many cases up to 20 or plus years. This is just an estimate here. Some are faster, some are slower, but nonetheless, it takes a long time. During this development, there are typically five different stages of development that are identified, ranging from discovery to idea development, which takes the discovery and tries to develop it to an application. That is then enters a startup phase where a company may actually take that technology and begin the development for commercialization. If it's successful, there's a growth stage of the company. Finally, as companies mature and get large and successful, there's also a reinvention stage, which frequently takes things back to the beginning with a different technology. The key point is, on the next slide, at the top of page two, I just want to point out that in the current knowledge-based economy, there's really four critical pieces of the puzzle to succeed in this economy. Research, which, as Senator Saltzman has said, the state has done a very good job with. The university and partnering with the state has done a great job. Infrastructure, world-class talent. But what I'd like to mention today in this topic of this bill is access to capital. The real take-home message is the slide on the bottom of page two, and this refers to what in some vernacular is referred to as the gap, but certainly much more dramatically as the Valley of Death, and Senator Saltzman referred to it. What this refers to is that period in the development through this continuum for which an interesting technology or discovery finds itself without capital for further development. And you might say, well, how does that happen? Well, the discovery phase, and I've tried to illustrate it for you on this slide, typically the discovery phase and idea development phase are supported by federal grants and occur at universities and companies under a basic research umbrella. And there's typically reasonably good funding levels, although that's becoming more and more challenging nationally, to support that type of research. Once it reaches a certain point, much of the federal funding programs don't really provide continued support for nascent technologies. And that technology is usually too early in its development to be a safe investment for a major company to invest in to develop further. So what happens is very promising technologies and small companies that master that technology find themselves in the Valley of Death or the gap, where funding from federal sources, funding from corporate sources are not available because of the nature of the technology. This is an area in which a large number of great technologies and, in many cases, small companies actually fail. Bridging this gap is a critical strategy required in any successful economic development program and certainly is a very strong element in many programs at states that are competing with Minnesota for these type of jobs and industries. The top of page three, what I've tried to do is illustrate the Valley of Death as that gray rectangle and just show you relative to the various stages of the development pipeline, as I've just mentioned, the various types of funding strategies that are usually applied to help bridge this gap. And one of the key elements that we're here to talk about today is the SBIR, STTR grants, and the program that's run through the Office of Science and Technology. You can see there's multiple other funding sources, but typically this SBIR and this angel investor early stage investment is really critical to begin entry and exit from this gap, the Valley of Death. If you go down to the bottom of page three, again, just trying to contextualize this, I've taken or committed the sin, perhaps, of referencing the Wisconsin Act 255. The reason I put that in there is that that is a very perfect example of what our competitive states are doing to try to capture technology, companies, and employees from Minnesota by offering attractive ways to bridge this gap. And I'm not going to go through these various elements, but the Wisconsin Act 255 has very specific programs to address these different approaches in investing in technology and innovation through the Valley of Death. And the Office of Science and Technology and the funding provided last year, and certainly the funding being sought in this particular bill, is to really reinforce our ability to bridge the gap with companies and technologies in Minnesota. It's absolutely essential. The office has done an admirable job of stewardship of those funds, but as you've already heard, continued funding was not included in the governor's budget, And in fact, even if it were, I doubt it would be at the level that is required. So I'm here to support that. The final thing is just to mention on page four to help, I think, put it in the context of relevance to this committee. You know, Minnesota is competing for jobs, and it's a national competition. Jobs require good, strong companies and businesses, and so the state needs to grow, recruit, and retain those companies. Therefore, we have to be able to put competitive packages on the table in order to keep companies here, to attract companies. And I think we need to recognize that it is indeed a competition for which the stakes are remarkably high. Minnesota, unfortunately, is behind the curve in terms of development of some of these strategies compared to our states that we compete with routinely. And I think the time is now, and so I would certainly strongly endorse the bill here. With that, I'll conclude.
You mentioned sheepishly almost Wisconsin. You have to mention the states next door, because if we don't do things like this and angel investments and other things that they already do, you have to mention Act 255 and other examples of other parts, not just for this bill, but other technological and other startup stuff and that we're behind. And if we better darn well catch up, or we're going to be back in the dust forever.
Chair Metzen, Senators, I couldn't have said it better myself, and I would have much preferred having been in Wisconsin extolling the virtues of Minnesota's bill. And that's the only reason I introduced it sheepishly at this point. I don't mean to say is better than what Minnesota can do. I think Minnesota can and needs to do exactly this type of thing.
But it's a catch-up thing as far as I'm concerned. And Senator Salzman, do you have some other folks that would like to?
Excuse me. Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ernst is here from Lockheed Martin to sort of give a frontline perspective on what this really means in terms of the business world.
Thank you for the time today. My name is Steve Ernst, Lockheed Martin. I'm the manager of a group called Partner Technology, which is really looking at technologies that hopefully we would get in our products, say, 5 to 8 years from now. What we find is that science and technology is really a core to our business, kind of products and systems we put together for the U.S. government and various agencies of the government. So the federal government, talking about SBIR, is kind of a good example to use as a model for what's going on out there. The Small Business Innovative Research Program and its complementary program called the STTR, which is a Small Business Technology Transition Program, which requires university involvement as well as industrial involvement, is a very key way of developing technology that we want to harvest for our products in the future. As an example, what's going on now at the federal level, roughly 3% of all development dollars that are put forth on all development programs are pulled out and go into the SBIR and STTR program. This is a significant amount of money, multiple billions of dollars per year. And while we as a large company cannot get those dollars directly, it's very much to our advantage to work with those small companies wherever they are around the country to bring that technology forward, work with them, help them mature it. But what happens, and you articulated very well, is the government develops the technology to what they call a technology readiness level. This is like a TRL level 3 or 4. As a systems integrator, we need to get it to a level 7 or 8 to put it in a system. So consequently, there's this valley of death that has to be transitioned through. The ability to move those businesses and move that technology forward is a very important way to take and leverage businesses that we have in the state, as well as then the technologies that are supporting those that you eventually get into our products. So we're very supportive of anything we can do but to help small companies out, to mature the technology and help them do that. As a national business, I see this happening around the country. Wisconsin was mentioned. I know Ohio does it very, very aggressively. That's another probably a model. If you want to go after a really aggressive model, that's a good model to use. Virginia, South Carolina, a number of states are picking up on this, really focusing with the small business.
Well, Iowa and South Dakota have good programs. They're better programs than we have. And we don't have enough tools yet. So this is one of the tools in the box that we need. But let's conclude here.
Absolutely. And because Ms. Love's here, I'd like her just to talk a little bit about some of the new initiatives that she's doing in the upcoming month. And again, this is something where if we sort of have a package of programs, we look at those investor credits, but then we also look at what do we do to bring people together? Where's that the office that really forms the partnerships that we're talking about between, you know, the public sector, the private sector, and then academia? And so having those initiatives, bringing companies together to do these kind of projects is very important. So, Ms. Leff, would you mind giving a little update? And I know she's not going to brag about what she's doing, but she should be, because when I have talked to companies that she has worked with, it's like I never knew that these kind of programs existed, or, you know, the important partnerships or just the networking. We hear repeatedly about sort of that, you know, the entrepreneurial. You have a handout that was out, and I think it's at that I'll let you speak.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Betsy Luffs. I'm the director for the Office of Science and Technology. SBIR's TTR funding is a critical component of the office. The office also is working to take the technology from concept through commercialization, through the valley of death, bring together what I call the triple helix, and I work with a lot of federal agencies, and I work with a lot of Department of Defense. The triple helix is government, industry, academia. One of the things I noticed when I moved here 4 years ago from Ohio, sorry, great program there, was that people don't talk. So my goal was to get people talking and conversing and bringing them together. So what I try to do is serve as a network connector or a broker, you may say. My focus specifically is on federal funding, SBIR level for the small business, but also how can the small companies go after federal funding in the SBIR program, and then how can they layer the other opportunities for funding? You've got broad agency announcements, you've got special requests. So how can they strategically align their technology development from beginning to end and use the different levels of funding to take that product to market? Sometimes it's partnering with someone like a Lockheed Martin. Sometimes it's partnering with a university. Sometimes it's companies partnering together. Or, unfortunately, sometimes they go out of the state. These jobs that are created in this funding opportunity, in funding opportunities with high-tech companies, average $60,000, $65,000 a year. Now, if you were in the Business and Jobs Committee last week, Kerry Marusich at Third Wave Systems, he pays $100,000 a year for his engineers, and he's hiring. You don't hear a lot of that. So the office is organized to bring those groups together, focus specifically on federal funding. One of the things that Senator Saltzman asked me to talk about is one of the initiatives I'm working on. There's two levels to it. The first one we've started about a little over a month ago, and everyone is, I'm sure, well aware of stimulus funding, and you're probably going to get tired of it by the end of when session is over. Minnesota has a lot of capability to bring together small companies, large companies, and academic institutions to partner on this stimulus funding that is coming down the pike. So on April 17th at the 3M Innovation Center, they are hosting an announcement of a group that will be called MetNet. MetNet will be a member-driven organization. Many of these small companies have no idea how to access this funding, where to go, how do they do it, who can they partner with. So what we're trying to do is bring together everyone in the room. That is one of the concepts. A recent program we're working on is how do we get the companies, so step aside from the federal funding to go after federal funding, how do we get the small companies, large companies, and academia to work together to be more proactive? Minnesota could create centers of excellence in different areas with all of the research capabilities and the intellectual capital that we have here, but how can we bring those groups together to be more proactive? Because when these requests for proposals, as we say, RFPs are let, you have 30, sometimes 60 days. And if the groups are not prepared, and when you're dealing with big institutions, they cannot in any way, shape, or form put something together that quickly. So it's trying to be bring a more proactive approach. It's all specifically geared on federal funding. As far as I know, this office is the only office in all the state offices that focuses on going after federal funding outside of what would be considered formula grants that they get or workforce grants or things like that. So it's strictly for research and development to create high-paying jobs.
And this appropriation would leverage a lot of, we're talking about federal money that, have any idea like 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 or?
Well, for, here's
is it hard to say, I suppose, but.
Here's another a program that it's very small, but it's these programs just started in January, the matching programs. But the commercialization plan program, when a company submits a phase two proposal to the SBIR, you've got a lot of scientists sitting around the table. They don't necessarily wear the business hat well. If they do not have their commercialization plan put together, their science may be fabulous. Their commercialization plan is not. They will not be awarded about $750,000 in funding. So what the office has done is we're paying a service provider who is an expert in commercialization planning to put together this plan for these folks. So right now we have 40,000 in contract with four different groups, and the companies are going after $5.62 million. So if we use the 40,000, if now it's a competition, it's federal money, we're not going to know for 6 months, but if we invest 40,000 to get 5.62 million, I think that's a pretty good deal.
On that point, Mr. Chair, you know, we've heard that, you know, in terms of federal return, I think it's like 70-some cents on the dollar. So to have an office that really focuses on that, and I hope that you've felt a sense of optimism when we talk about this office, because we're talking so many times about layoffs and companies closing. And when you start talking about this, you kind of have a sense of hope that Minnesota has potential. But the problem that we're seeing, and when we talk with a lot of these small businesses, and Senator Metzen has done a wonderful job within the business committee of having chats with some of these groups, they're getting calls from states all across the country that are looking, and they have these programs in place. And it's really bringing people together. It's the networking. It's the dollars to get them through. And so many of these folks will say, I love Minnesota. I want to stay here. But to get over the valley of death, to get through this funding gap, I might have to go elsewhere. Or else the money is coming here from other places, and then whoever's investing at some point says, hey, I want you in my backyard. So if we can do these kind of things, it's an investment, and I know that our resources are very, very limited. But you look at this, this is our future. This is how we invest in future prosperity. And the office, I believe, in talking, it's been, you know, up and running now for about 9 months, maybe not even that. And you see the excitement as you talk to the small high-tech companies that that Ms. Loves is working with. They're engaged. They're excited. They have hope. And so that is the bill. It is a $2 million investment each year. And of this amount, $1 million is for technology matching grants. So that is the proposal, Mr. Chair.
Well, we just can't afford to continue to fall behind our neighbors, well, the whole nation, but particularly our neighboring states here. It's just we're getting too far behind. So anyway, that's enough of my preaching. But the only reason I say this is because we've heard so much of this stuff in the other committee, too, along with Senator Tomasoni's committee. But quite a lot over there. We know what the competition is. Okay. Senator Tomasoni or Sparks would like to move Senate File 1446 be considered in the package. Is that the term? Close, yeah. Laid on the table for further consideration. In the omnibus Tomasoni bill. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you. Very good.
Thank you very much, committee.
Senator Metzen, you have a witness here?
Yeah.
Senator Metzen.
Thank you. Senate File 14 or 1320 is legislation that supports the Humanities Center and Commission in Minnesota. We've been helping them over the years, and they do wonderful things. And the current biennium appropriation is $500,000, and that's what we're seeking, about $250,000 for the next 2 years, obviously $500,000. We heard earlier this year from Stanley Robenstein, and he informed the committee that the center's return on the state's investment is 14-1, which is quite a leveraged amount. Fortunately, I don't know why I haven't talked to the governor, but he has eliminated all of the funding going forward for the next 2 years in this extremely important area. And I guess that's why we have a legislative branch of government, too. So in case we think something is worthwhile funding, we're here, too. So I'm here to support the Humanities Center. And with me is Senator's Vice President, Matt Brandt, and he might say a few words, and I know it's late in the day, so. But we've done this before, and we certainly would like to see this Humanities Commission move forward.
Dr. Brandt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Metzen. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matthew Brandt. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota Humanities Center, and it's a pleasure to be here to speak in favor of Senate File 1320, support for the Minnesota Humanities Center. Senator Metzen mentioned the ask is $500,000. In a previous meeting, Stanley Romenstein, our agency's president, has outlined both the work that we've done to the benefit of Minnesota as well as the return on investment, but also the impact, the real impact that we would feel and that Minnesotans would feel if the funding was not restored in the current in the 2010-2011 budget. I'll just be efficient with my time and highlight at least three things that this money would help Minnesota Humanities Center better serve, continue to serve Minnesotans. First, it would allow us to match federal funds that we receive from the National Endowment for the Humanities, funds that we are required to match one-to-one. We do use state funds to match these federal funds, and without state matching dollars, these funds are put at risk. Therefore, additional funds that we use to serve Minnesotans are put at risk without support from the state of Minnesota. Senator Metzen mentioned the 14-to-1 return on investment. The state of Minnesota funding that comes to the Minnesota Humanities Center is significant for leveraging private support for the Minnesota Humanities Center so that we can serve Minnesotans at a greater level throughout the state and in pretty much every community across Minnesota. So the without, again, the federal funds, our leverage dollars, or without the state funds, we would not have as much ability to leverage additional private support. I would like to see a decrease in those funds as well. And finally, these funds support our conference center, our meeting and event center that is on the east side of St. Paul by Lake Phelan, the state of Minnesota, helped us build and open in 1995. For those of you who haven't been to the building, please come by, and I'd love to give you a tour. For those of you who have, I hope you come back again. We are located in the restored Children's Hospital School, Gillette Children's Hospital School on the east side of St. Paul. We are a full-service meeting and event center. We also office there. Over 10,000 Minnesotans use the Meeting and Event Center every year. They're educators, school administrators, citizens, their foundation board members, state government offices, the Department of Administration, Revenue, Department of Natural Resources are all customers and clients of our building. Minnesotans really benefit from having, again, this easily accessible full-service meeting and event center on the east side of St. Paul. It's an asset to the neighborhood, builds a sense of community, contributes to the community. Without state funds, we would be forced to close this community asset and this meeting place where Minnesotans come to plan to meet the needs of Minnesotans in the future. So I hope I can impress upon you all that this is essential funding. It's not nice funding. It's funding that the Minnesota Humanities Center requires to continue to serve and meet the needs of Minnesotans in the years ahead. So thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Mr.
Although it's located in St. Paul, it's certainly a statewide significant what they do and what they accomplish. So the building happens to be in the north side of St. Paul. So.
Thank you for your testimony. Any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, Senator Metzen will lay over Senate File 1320 for possible inclusion in the economic development bill.
Thank
you
very
much. All
those
in favor say aye.
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 Motion prevails. Mr. O'Rourke.
Mr. Chair, members, on Monday, I believe we are hearing public yeah, we have more bills on Monday, and I'm blanking out on what they are right now. More bills. Appropriations bills.
Good.
With that, the meeting's adjourned.